Hello and welcome to the Yes to Life show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, host for the show and founder of Yes to Life, the UK charity on a mission to make integrative medicine available to everyone in the UK unfortunate enough to have cancer. Today, I have someone new to the show as my guest, Nikki Jackson. Nikki is a highly experienced yoga therapist who trains other practitioners in supporting people with chronic conditions such as cancer. Yoga is now widely recognised as an excellent resource for those with chronic conditions, so I'm keen to hear what Nikki has to say about it in relation to cancer. I'm speaking to Nikki over the internet. Nikki, welcome to the Yes Life Show. Lovely to have you here.
Thank you so much, Robin. Lovely to be here. Thank you for asking me.
So my memory is long enough to remember a time when the very idea that something like yoga might be specifically good for people with cancer was probably best kept to yourself if you wanted to avoid being the focus for derision or outright attack. And I'm very happy to say that although we may be languishing well down the league table of nations that embrace integrative medicine, you and I can have a chat about this important topic on the radio, and the majority of people won't bat an eyelid. So it's a big and heartening change has happened. There's still quite a few out there, particularly within oncology, who actually preferred the good old days. There's not much chance they're actually listening to the show right now, but we do come across them and we have to deal with them. What would you say to people who still firmly say there's no evidence for any of this new age stuff and the only things that matter are the tried and tested cancer treatments at the heart of oncology?
Interesting question. I think in recent years, and I would say really gaining momentum over the last 10 years, but particularly in the last 5 years, there has been a lot of scientific research and evidence coming through that yoga really does help with a multitude of chronic health conditions, and cancer being one of them. And primarily, yoga is known to help relieve stress and anxiety, and stress and anxiety plays its toll on the body. So the overall evidence and the general evidence through these scientific researches is that it helps to relax obviously the mind, but the body, and particularly the functions of the body.
Right. Okay. Well, on your website, I read that you're currently running a 550-hour teacher training program, yoga therapy for the British Wheel of Yoga, training teachers to become more competent in supporting people with health conditions. Sounds inspiring, but no doubt a very long journey for you getting there. Can we hear the story of how you got to where you are today, starting at the very beginning? What got you into yoga in the first place?
It is a very long time ago, Robin. You're absolutely right. I think if I go back, probably nearly 40 years ago, I tried my first yoga class, and I went with a friend. We were about, it's going to show my age now, but we were about 19, and terribly giggly, and couldn't understand this weird and wacky delivery of a class. But something shifted after that class. And I would say that what shifted for me was an understanding or a connection with my body that I hadn't really had before or known before. I think we're not kind of brought up in school to respect and treat our bodies well. But in the yoga tradition, there's very much this connection between the mind and body. After that, I kind of went away and did my teenage travel into my young 20s as well, early 20s. A lot of traveling and, a lot of nature-based kind of living in mountains, this sort of thing. And I came back into this country and decided I wanted to train as an occupational therapist. So, working with in health in the NHS. And I did my training and began to attend more regular yoga classes. And when I became an occupational therapist, we were responsible for bringing in a timetable of activities. One of our roles was a timetable of activities. And of course, I introduced yoga. First of all, into a day center for people with neurological chronic health conditions. But later on, particularly in elderly care and also in mental health departments. And really, that is how the yoga therapy was created, if you like, in my life. And it was so evidently successful that people could manage their health conditions in a way where they weren't getting too anxious about them or too tense in the body, where it compromised the functions of the body and the organs. So I decided then later on, which is really only about 7 years ago, that it was about time to leave the NHS and to set up my own yoga therapy teacher training courses.
Amazing. So the time you were doing that you're describing, this was pretty pioneering stuff. I take it there wasn't a lot of yoga going on for people with chronic conditions.
Absolutely. And it was really exciting, actually. I mean, I've worked with people who've been really very disabled, physically disabled, and unable, therefore, to do what most people, I think, see yoga as, is sort of, you know, these challenging postures or standing on their head or, you know, wearing these wonderful kind of yoga pants and whatever. But actually yoga is so much. And in that context, we did so much with facial, you know, relaxing the facial muscles, learning how to breathe effectively, learning how to relax the mind. And, you know, there's so many practices that have lasted for centuries that are still pertinent today to help us feel, you know, balanced.
Right. I just want to hop back to where you started talking about your how you got into this. I was quite impressed that this one yoga class had a noticeable effect that you picked up on. That was quite stunning, really, isn't it?
Yes, it was, because I, you know, like most people, I sort of was kind of encouraged by a friend to go along. I wasn't really expecting very much, but and I was very giggly. I can remember it, but it really did have an impact. And you know, I noticed that I was slowing down. It's where I was rushing around quite a lot, and I think in this day and age, certainly pre-COVID, you know, we're all encouraged to pack a lot in and to rush around and achieve more and more and more until we get so wound up, like a kind of spring that just gets really coiled up tightly. And I can remember that, you know, I slowed down after that session and was a lot more kind of aware and mindful. Mindful is a word we use a lot in yoga.
Right.
And more connected with myself.
How interesting. And out of interest, where was that? Were you abroad somewhere, or was this in the UK?
It was in the UK. It was in a place called Watlington, which is very near Oxford.
Great. So there's something you've mentioned twice along the way there, which is about the effect that it can have on the bodily system. So it's a sort of secondary effect, if you like, that you're talking about, where stress then affects how all the bodily systems operate. And this can have a detrimental effect, obviously. And yoga can get in there. Is that, do you want to say a bit more about that?
Yeah, I really like the way you said "get in there." and I think, I mean, I think that is a good way of saying it, because, you know, it's but subtly. So, you know, if we're really, really stressed, then the breathing becomes very short. And we know this. When we're feeling anxious, you get a little bit breathless. And if you've ever been with somebody that's actually getting quite panicky, having a panic attack, you'll know it's all very quick and short.
Right.
So one of the main practices with yoga is deep breathing, you know, slowing the breath right down. And this has a relaxed, I'll come back to the breath, you know, a little bit further on, but slow breathing has a deeply relaxing effect on the body. And it gives the organs a chance to sort of function at a more natural pace. Mm-hmm. And therefore function more effectively. I think, you know, we're feeling very anxious. And again, you know, the modern day lifestyle pre-COVID was very fast. And that pace is very, very fast. And breathing then becomes very, very fast. And therefore the organs, so let's say the digestive system or the circulatory system, or, you know, certain organs have to speed up with that pace. So, yes, yoga, you know, the relaxations and the deep breathing really helps everything to slow down and work at the pace they were designed to, so the organs, you know, can function more effectively.
Mm-hmm. Okay, interesting. So, you've talked about yoga and you've also talked about yoga therapy. So these are not quite the same thing, I think. So do you want to summarize the differences?
I really do, Robin. Yes, thank you. I get asked this question a lot.
Right.
And I would say very simply, yoga, if you go to a yoga class, that is a teacher teaching you about yoga. And there are so many yoga classes around now.
Right.
The trainings have become very diluted, very fast-tracked. Back in my day, and this is, you know, back in the early 90s, it actually took me 4 years to train, and now I believe you can do it in 3 weeks.
Oh.
So there's a big difference in the trainings nowadays. But yoga classes with a teacher are about education of a subject. And then yoga therapy is, as it says, it's therapy. And in therapy, you are supported by a therapist who kind of helps you to unravel what has drawn you to ill health. So we have this word in yoga, it's dis-ease. Hmm. What has brought you to dis-ease? In other words, the opposite of ease. And if we can kind of support a person on that journey to unravel how they've become in this state of dis-ease, then, you know, we can help them come back into ease, basically.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's clear. Thank you. I want to talk a little bit about yoga as a sort of specialist line for people with cancer. It has specialist training presumably attached to it, and you're involved in giving that. Is that correct?
Yes, it's one of the modules that we offer on the teacher training, the Yoga Focus, which is, you know, my organization. It's one of the modules that we have on the teacher training program.
Hmm. So would you say it's correct that there's quite a bit to know in order to become a yoga therapist or even a yoga teacher for somebody who's got or has had cancer?
Yes, I would say it's really important that you choose somebody very carefully if you want to work with a yoga teacher. The yoga therapists, they obviously have this training on a module, and there are other yoga therapy trainings out there as well. But I would say overall, holistically, that they are trained to really assess a person. So we're not quite so much concerned with the condition itself, although we do need to be very knowledgeable about the contraindications. Mm-hmm. But what we are concerned as yoga therapists is the person as a whole, how it is that this particular person and in their lifestyle, how it is that they've come to present with this particular condition, which in this case would be cancer.
Right. Okay. So, as I mentioned at the beginning, yoga is more and more accepted as a good choice for well-being, and that's physical and mental. It's rather uniquely placed in that it straddles two areas that have each made significant inroads into culture generally, but also specifically into oncology. So that's exercise and mindfulness. They're both big in general life, but also particularly with cancer. So each of these now have got a wealth of science, as you said, behind them, demonstrating significant benefit when it comes to meeting a diagnosis of cancer, as well as making a good and a lasting recovery. I wanted to go into the main areas of benefit one by one, if I may. What would you put at the top of the list of specific benefits of yoga to people with cancer?
I would say that the number one benefit is in yoga, our intention is to get what is called prana. Prana in yoga means energy. And we often refer to it as the life force, if you like. Mm-hmm. And this is very much connected with the way that you breathe as well. So what we're doing is through stretching, gentle stretches and breathing practices, we are improving this flow of prana inside the body. And it's interesting that you asked that question because only recently I was watching a David Attenborough documentary, and he was showing the coral that had died in an area. I can't remember where it was, but we know this is happening all over the world. And he was saying that what we need to do environmentally is to bring some life back into that area in order to replenish the coral, to bring the colour back into the coral. And I thought, actually, this is very similar. What we're doing here is we're improving the pranic flow inside the body, the energy. Mm-hmm. And if we could see it as a colour, that energy is flowing around the body, and it's kind of lighting up or rejuvenating all the cells, especially those that have become very, they're dying off or they've become very stagnant, and it's kind of reaching there and giving them a bit more color, a bit more light, a bit more life. Just like when we give some life back into the sea and the coral shines again.
Right, so yes,
that's the pranic flow, I would say, is definitely up there on the list.
Right. So this would apply, well, obviously to somebody who maybe has arrived at a diagnosis of cancer because of the poor energy flow in their body. Obviously, it's a good thing for them. But also people, I think, going through treatment, which might include surgery or very debilitating treatments, kind of can lose trust in their body. They can lose trust in a limb or some part of their body because of the surgery that's happened to it. I assume you could help in that area with this type of approach as well.
Yes, absolutely. And you mentioned mindfulness. And of course, I've said already that mindfulness is very much part of yoga. I think in that context, we would encourage somebody to form a new relationship with the body. It may have been that there's this sort of, a friction between, towards the body, that it hasn't been functioning as it should do. And, you know, what we're doing is bringing a sense of care and compassion back in towards the self and towards the body. And we do this with, certainly in the yoga therapy approaches, with compassion, kindness and compassion. And we encourage people to become embodied. So that might be something very simple, like taking your hand and just placing it on that area of the body that has been operated on or needs healing, and just kind of connecting with it and showing that part of your body that you actually do care and that you are going to be doing something about that area. That's really the mindfulness practices as well, the mindfulness for pain and the mindfulness for health is this gesture, really. It's very easy to do, just placing your hand on a part of the body that needs your attention, needs your care, needs your compassion, and needs to be healed. And you have that capacity, and you know, the therapist will be guiding you in that approach.
Right, kind of a message to self. So,
yes.
So another thing that came to mind while you were talking about this flow of energy around, well, of course, energy is something that people with cancer who are going through treatment can have absolutely zero of. You know, fatigue is a very widespread, common affliction of people on cancer treatment. And I presume that this is exactly the kind of practice that might have some effect on recovering from that.
Absolutely. I mean, in yoga, we have what I know as a Langwanic state and a Brahmanic state. So Langwanic state is as it sounds, it's Langwine. I think in French it's Langwer, something like that. It means weak. And then on the other end of the spectrum, we have Brahmanic, and that means sort of really heightened energy. And yoga means balance. And what we're trying to do or endeavoring to do is to bring balance back, to come into that middle of, you know, over-energized and under-energized, just be poised in the middle. And breathing is really useful for that. The breath can either, you know, bring more energy to lift somebody that's very tired, very feeling very weak, very under-energized. But equally, we use other practices that kind of bring somebody's energy, you know, further down from this Brahmanic state if they're feeling particularly anxious. Right. And of course, a diagnosis of cancer is very anxiety provoking. Yes. So we use breathing in that way to help rebalance energy.
Okay. A couple more things that are sort of connected, which I'd like to explore a bit. Resilience, generally, going through cancer treatment is a tough call. And also purpose and meaning. Very often people kind of lose their way when their life falls apart and all their plans are now on hold, possibly never going to happen. And so it's a tough call mentally and physically to get through that and to build some sort of resilience and direction.
Yes, absolutely. And I, from the yoga point of view, in yoga, a lot of the practices relate to nature, and nature really teaches us a lot. We've turned our back on nature quite a bit, you know, as societies, but actually there's a lot there to look at. And one of the things that I always kind of bring into my sessions is looking at a plant. And a plant is very, very rooted. The roots are really embedded into the earth. It feels very kind of, you know, stable at the base. And a tree is the same. The roots are really embedded into the earth to hold it there. But a plant and a tree then sort of really reaches up and grows up towards the sunlight. Mm-hmm. And I teach people very much, or guide people, I should say, very much in that analogy, because posture is really important for resilience. So if you're feeling very timid, very tired, you tend to sort of bend forwards and cower in with the head dropping down, and that creates darkness inside the body, darkness around organs and cells. But if we're like a plant and a tree, we're very rooted at the base of the posture, but we lift up. So I always say, lift your belly button, your chest bone, your collarbones, and the crown of your head is reaching up towards the sunlight. Then you feel much, much more sturdy and strong and resilient than if you're kind of dropping the posture down. So yes, resilience comes from posture, a really, you know, upright, open posture.
Okay.
In that way.
And do you find that yoga can help people with things like purpose and meaning?
Yes, absolutely. If you look at the mindfulness aspect of yoga, we are very much living in the moment and enjoying the moment. I've been very fortunate to have done some training up in northern India with Tibetan teachers. And they're just wonderful, absolutely mm-hmm. wonderful, because of their positivity.
Right.
And also making light of any given situation. So I've kind of taken on board this approach where we create light inside the body, and we kind of, you know, make sure that we smile. A smile actually helps us to relax, whether we feel like it or not. I encourage people to smile, just to lift the corners of the mouth, not into a cheesy grin, but just into a more sort of contented in the moment smile. And I think this is what helps people find where they're at in any given moment and not get too caught up in where they ought to be or expecting something or trying to fix everything, but instead just being happy, contented, perhaps I should say, in this particular moment. And in that way, we all find a purpose. We can steadily grow from these moments of kind of contentment.
Right. Okay. So I'm going to give you a little scenario now. Okay, here I am. I'm in bed listening to this, thinking to myself, God, this sounds very wonderful, but I've got zero energy. I'm in pain. I feel sick a lot of the time. Quite frankly, would struggle to find even a shred of motivation. The very idea of yoga sounds like a million miles away. It's those people in Lycra doing amazing bendy things. What's the way? What's the door? Where do you start for somebody who's, you know, really in quite a bad way?
Yeah, well, it's absolutely fine if you're lying down, if you're lying in bed and you know, feeling very unmotivated. I would come to the breath in that instance. The breath is with us every single moment of every single day and every single night, mm-hmm. from the moment we're born until the moment we leave life. And in yoga, the breath is known as the master, and it really is the essence of our existence. And there's really so much to the way that we breathe that you can bring curiosity into the quality of your breathing. And I love the practice where we relate the breath to a gentle wave inside the body. I often say, as you inhale, just kind of see a wave rolling up along the seashore. And as you exhale, just kind of have an image of a wave rolling back down again into the sea, and that becomes very massaging, to kind of have a sense of this gentle, soothing wave-like motion inside. So breathing would be really, really beneficial in those moments, in those times when you're too tired to even sit up. But of course, the relaxations in yoga, we have a relaxation practice called Yoga Nidra, which is really quite deep and allows the mind and the body just to really let go and settle into a deeper relaxed state.
Hmm. Okay.
So, yes, I think there are certainly many little practices that can be done lying down in bed just as much as seated as well. There may be just very, very slowly moving fingers and connecting in with the body. We also do eye practices, which can be very soothing, especially if you're thinking a lot, your eye muscles can get very tense. Mm-hmm. And also if you're frowning because you're in pain, we can do a certain amount to release that frown, which actually helps to then release the, or certainly subside some of the pain that you're suffering from.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm interested in the relationship between yoga and pain, its capacity to help with different kinds of pain. What have you found in your experience?
Yes, again, I think in our experience, or my experience, pain, we can get very caught up in pain. And one of the things that that yoga helps us with is what we call, what I know as, and this is in the mindfulness practices, is the secondary layer that we put on top of pain. So it's all the associated thoughts that we have over and above the already existing painful experience. So what we do on the yoga therapy courses is encourage people again to have this new relationship with pain. And I've said this before, it's like with the condition itself, to place your hand on that area. And that begins this new relationship. It sort of suggests, it's a gesture to say, I hear you, to the pain in the body.
Okay.
And then the breath is actually very powerful. So if we were to draw the breath towards that area of pain and just let the movement of the breath kind of massage it in a very gentle wave-like motion, that can help to really subside the intensity of the pain. It's not saying it's going to take it away. Of course not. But what it does do is help it feel more manageable. And it also stops this escalation of worrying and anxiety around this painful experience. Mm. So yeah, the hand on that area and just using the breath in this very gentle, soothing kind of way can help to subside the intensity.
Hmm. Sounds like incredibly important information for somebody who has to deal with pain ongoingly. It's kind of part of their life, and they just have to live with it.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And you know, it's not saying that it's going to take it all away, but what we are saying is with these practices, it makes them all more manageable. And as I say, just kind of reduces the intensity and the overwhelmingness of it all.
Mm-hmm. Would you like to tell us about how someone goes about finding a yoga therapist with the right experience and training to work with? Obviously, they could come to you, but if that's not possible, how do they find the right kind person?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think it's so important nowadays that people in whatever therapy, that they look for the accreditation, make sure that who you're seeking advice from has been fully trained. And really the training in England, in the UK, the accredited training comes from the British Council of Yoga Therapists.
Okay.
And there's also the International Association of Yoga Therapists as well. So the IAYT or the BCYT initials after someone's name.
Okay.
Is what to look at.
Presumably there's websites with listings of these people.
Yes, you can go onto the British Council of Yoga Therapy. There's also the British Wheel of Yoga is also promoting yoga therapy, so you can look on there. Yes, I mean, those are the main two, the British Council of Yoga Therapy and the International Association as well.
Mm. Okay, so we're coming towards the end. I just wanted to talk to you about relationship to life and how this is fundamental to well-being. I know this is something that's important to you personally, so I'm interested in what you've learnt and that you can share. I mean, you state that you are dedicated to living a simple yet meaningful life. Why?
I think we have all the answers in life. That is my view. I think that we are encouraged to achieve, and achieve even more. Mm-hmm. And we, in doing that, we are drawing further and further away from the tools that we already have, we were already born with, and that we can very easily tap back into if we just keep life a little bit more simple. So yes, it is very much to my heart nowadays, certainly. I think it always has been, but particularly nowadays, is to keep life simple. And I don't mean, when I say uncluttered, I don't mean sort of, empty, but I mean in a way that we can live a sort of moment by moment life, and, that we're not bringing in too many things to have to cope with. In the there's a fantastic saying in meditation, which is, it comes from Thich Nhat Hanh, who's the Vietnamese monk that does so much with mindfulness. Mm-hmm. And he says, don't have too many cows. And that basically means that, we don't want too many projects going on all at the same time. We just want to keep life simple, and just one cow is actually enough in a traditional life. It provides enough for you, or maybe it's one goat, I don't know, but it provides enough for you. But the moment you start, thinking, oh, I can have six cows now, or next year I can have 20, that's when things start getting a bit more drawing away from the inherent tools that you already have in your body to keep you well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and do you mind me asking, in your case, Nikki, what just give us a picture of what your life looks like, the things you don't have in your life that many people do, and the things you do have in there that maybe many people don't.
Okay. I walk as much as I possibly can. I avoid, getting in the car, for example, and I know that's not how we're living at the moment, but I'm getting out in nature as much as I possibly can. My morning is actually spent, first of all, meditating. It's the first thing I do in the morning so that my mind can be really focused for the day and be as clear and uncluttered as possible. When I don't meditate, the thoughts start kind of coming in and sort of gaining a bit of momentum. So it's really important to me that I clear my mind through meditation right at the beginning of the day. And then I always go out into the garden. I say always, that's maybe not quite true. There have been times when I haven't. But I go out into the garden barefoot, and I have been in the winter. And I just stand out in the garden, look up at the sky. I feel the contact of the earth beneath my feet. It's very reassuring. And then I look up at the sky, and the sky might sometimes be rainy. And other times it might be a beautiful sunny day. But it really helps me to see my place in whatever it is that's going on for me right now, my place on this earth. And a bird might fly through the sky, and I think, well, there's that bird, and that bird has a right to be here as well. And then you hear voices around, and just kind of having this sense that we're all in this together, we've all got a rightful place, and we're sharing as well. I think this whole aspect of connection is really important, both in mindfulness and in yoga. And connection not just with other people, but connection with the earth and connection with nature, and just finding our place in it.
Right.
Yeah.
And are there a few things you avoid that most people would normally have in their home or in their life? You said carbs.
Sugar,
right, yeah, sugar and carbs.
Sugar. I'm not going to get into diet, because it's not my subject. But, no. I am very careful about my diet, and I do think that sugar is definitely one when you've asked me that question. It's just things like, and I think most people know this anyway, or maybe are doing this, but, you know, just reducing the amount that I, in other words, I have just enough information for me to make decisions. So, for example, from the news, right. I'm not constantly listening to the news. I listen somehow or read somehow once a day, so I'm connected enough, but I'm very aware of when I'm starting to get too involved with it and it's producing anxiety. So sort of keeping that simple, avoiding too much information coming in. Just too much of too much food, too much sugar, and just, you know, keeping a simple life, really, that I can manage. I can, pace as well.
Hmm. Okay, hope you didn't mind me delving in there. Just really interested.
No, not at all.
I'm sure people listening want to know what you're talking about exactly. So it's good. You're obviously walking the talk. This is what you think people should do to be well, and you're doing it. So excellent. Thanks so much for coming on the show today, Nikki. I really loved talking to you, and I really enjoyed the workshop you did recently for Wigwam, the Yes to Life Cancer Support Group. Thanks again for doing that. And also to let listeners know about the 4 weekly free breath workshops that you're doing for Wigwam currently. Full details of that at wigwam.org.uk under wellbeing sessions. So, yeah, a big thank you to you, Nikki.
Well, thank you so much for asking me, Robin. I've really, really enjoyed it. And I'm very much looking forward to these breathing sessions. We're going to do a little bit of opening the chest and kind of getting some prana, some energy back into the lungs, and then we'll see what yoga practices come up. There's going to be some humming.
All right,
humming.
Great.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Do take a look at Nikki's website at yogafocus.co.uk to read more about her work and make contact. And if you're interested in joining her free workshops at Wigwam, go to wigwam.org.uk and look under Wellbeing Sessions. If you've not heard about Wigwam, this is a Yes to Life initiative offering support groups centered around a shared interest in integrative medicine, as well as regular online events. For example, last week's free forum featured Dr. Nina Fuller-Chavelle. It was very well attended, and feedback included comments such as, "Approach and knowledge is what I've been looking for, clear, concise and scientific." And, "As always, very informative." Dr. Fuller-Chavelle was very knowledgeable, and it was so helpful to hear from a doctor experienced in functional and integrative medicine. The average rating from attendee feedback was 4.8 stars. So do go and take a look for yourself. It's at wigwam.org.uk. And some great news. Our long-postponed Congress on the subject of nutritional science and cancer, exploring the growing consensus and unanswered contradictions, will be held online on the 27th and 28th of March. We have an amazing lineup of experts to take us on this journey, including the BBC Food Programme's Sheila Dillon, Dr. Naisha Winters, oncologist Dr. Penny Kekeyoglu, Dr. David Unwin, Robert Verkirk, and many more.
You can find out more and catch the early bird pricing by clicking the link that's in the banner right at the top of the homepage on the Yes to Life website. That's yestolife.org.uk. This is going to be a supremely stimulating weekend that includes workshops for you to engage in on the Sunday. Thanks for listening today. Tune in again next week for another Yes to Life show, another expert on integrative medicine for cancer, here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.